Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called My 4-Step Plan for Success and Other Tips from HardToFindSeminars.com. When I was asked to be one of the first interviews for a new website on interviewing, of course I agreed. It's free publicity for me, and if it helps me even get one person to learn a new skill, then it's worth it. And I'm glad I decided to do it because Norman asked me about topics I've never covered before, including the most important piece of marketing advice I can think of for success. Unfortunately, there is no magic pill you can take to succeed, but there is a proven plan you can follow. And in this interview, you'll hear exactly what my plan is. You'll also learn why it's important to pick a topic you're interested in for audio interviews and how to fake it if you're not. Why you should have a mission and purpose on how to use it in your marketing. You'll learn all about the marketing for the music industry, how to increase your credibility, separate yourself from your competition, and know when to use direct sales. You'll learn tips for getting traffic to your site and how I learned my SEO lesson the hard way when I lost my listing on Google. You'll learn a few shortcuts to success, how to beat out the competition in a highly saturated market, how to make the most out of your joint ventures, and how to market to other people's lists. You'll learn why I say time is the most precious commodity and two websites that will help you get some of that back. You'll learn what interviews are the most memorable for me and whether or not I keep in touch with any of my interviewees, and much, much more. Look, the most important thing you can do to be successful is get off your butt and start putting this information to use. Norman is doing just that, and in this audio interview, you'll hear just how easy and successful a first interview can be. Now let's get going.
Well, Michael, I'm very privileged to be speaking with you today, and I read from your website that you rarely do interviews, so I must have got something right when I approached you for an interview. This is relevant to anyone wishing to interview successful business people, etc. What made you agree to do the interview with me, and is there any additional advice you can give to enable people to obtain interviews from busy, successful entrepreneurs?
Well, it's real simple. You know, you did the most important thing that any student who's thinking about doing interviews, you just opened up your mouth and you asked. And you're never going to get anything unless you ask for it. I think we were emailing back and forth, and you told me something about what you were doing. You showed me your site. You said you're going to start an interview site, and would I do an interview? I just said, why not? Because why do people do interviews? Am I doing it to be a nice guy? Maybe, but most likely not. People give interviews because they're promoting something. When people go on Oprah or any of the talk shows or any of the news shows, they're promoting their book, they're promoting a new movie, they're promoting a play, they're promoting themselves as an expert. And the reason I said yes is, first of all, I need to start doing more interviews because I need to, like anybody, be doing more marketing and promotion. And even though I may be your first interview for your site, you know, you're just getting started. Who knows? You could be the next huge interview site. And I don't know how well you're going to do, but I'm banking you're going to do pretty well, and you're going to get that interview out to a lot of people that would never know about me. And by having that interview out to people that I would have never gotten it out to, that's promotion for me. That's free advertising for me. I just have to spend some time on the phone with you now and answer some questions, but that interview that you and I have done is going to work for you, and it's going to work for me ongoing because it'll be passed around on the internet. Hopefully it'll be listened to and downloaded. So I'm doing it really for a selfish reason, just like anyone who does an interview. It's a self-serving thing. They want free advertising. That is the bottom line why people are doing interviews.
Right. Okay. Well, that's fantastic. I wish everyone adopted that sort of approach. So anyway, there's an enormous amount of fantastic information on your website. I read through your biography. But for those who don't yet know you, can you please tell us about your educational background and what you consider to be your natural talent?
My educational background, I graduated high school in Atlanta, Georgia. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. And then I went to the University of Alabama, and University of Alabama was a school I got into because my grades weren't good enough to get into the University of Georgia. And I did graduate from the University of Alabama with a major in marketing and a minor in advertising, ironically. But the marketing and advertising I learned there really was nothing like the stuff you're going to learn in the real world, the stuff that I've been studying for, you know, over the years. But college was great. It was a party school. I was in a fraternity. It was a lot of fun. But other than that, that's all my formal education. But really soon after that, I started getting into personal development and motivational cassette tapes back then. And I've listened to, you know, Brian Tracy. I was really interested in learning how to sell. I studied the classics from a guy named Zig Ziglar. The stuff that a big company called Nightingale Conant, they're the leading company in the United States for educational cassette tapes. So I was always into learning from other experts. And if one goes to my site, harddivineseminars.com, they'll see that I've never lost that desire to learn. But that's all my formal education. And I guess what would my natural talent be? I think when it comes to what I'm doing now, the natural talent would probably be being able to listen, being a good listener, and being curious, and being really interested in the people I interview, and really dig and ask for good questions, just being thirsty for knowledge.
Right, yeah, you're usually a very sociable person with great communicative skills. So I suppose it's natural that you drew yourself into this interviewing business.
Yeah, but you know, if you think about it, anyone who's interested in something, if there's something you really want and you're interested in it, let's say you meet a new musician who does piano in a different style you never knew about, you're going to be excited. You're going to be interested. You're going to ask him questions. So I'm not doing anything unnatural that anyone else doesn't do already. The listeners are just catching it, you know, they're just listening to me be normal, and we're just happen to be capturing it, you know, as a digital audio recording. We can share it. So everything I'm doing is just natural. When you listen to, I guess, a good interview, some of the best ones are going to be the stuff that I'm most interested in.
Yeah, because you naturally show your enthusiasm. It comes out in the conversation. This is what makes a conversation very exciting.
That's right. So when you're doing interviews, and when your listeners, if they ever think about doing interviews, it's real important, if you're going to be doing this, to find something you're really interested in and find something that you're passionate about learning, so that natural curiosity comes through. Because your listeners, if they hear you just going through the motions and it's boring, they may listen to you for 10 minutes or so, but if you're not into it, they can pick that up and they won't listen to you again.
No, no. Last night I listened to an interview that you did with Ted Nicholas, and something which stuck out there was he said, make sure that if you're getting into a business that you are passionate about it. I think if you're not passionate about it, then that's when you're doomed to failure. That stuck out in my mind.
Right. Now, you can still do interviews about stuff that you're not passionate about if you're trying to create and develop an information product. Because really, the guy doing the interview really isn't about them. It's really about the guest that you're interviewing. And so if you're doing your interview right, you're not going to be talking that much. Mainly, it's going to be the expert who's going to be doing the talking. So it's also good to understand that the interviewer, when they're doing the interview, really understand it's not about them. It's about the guest that they're interviewing. And some interviewers make that mistake to kind of maybe talk too much during the interview. And you just got to understand the listener really wants to hear, you know, you're a conduit for the information. You're just doing them a favor.
Well, that's fantastic advice. So anyway, moving on from your biography, I see that your early days in business were conventional, labor-intensive processes. Apart from going door-to-door installing home security equipment, you also ran a T-shirt manufacturing business. I was wondering what other businesses you were involved with, and how did you migrate into internet marketing?
The T-shirt business, I operated in college. I was manufacturing tie-dye T-shirts. I graduated the University of Alabama. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had some money from my T-shirt business. I couldn't even sell the business, but I closed the store. It was a retail store, and I was doing manufacturing. And I wanted to get out of Alabama. And my brother had just landed a corporate job with a company called Anixter, and he was going to move to Nashville, Tennessee. So I said, all right, I'll come up to Nashville. And he had a job. I didn't come up there with a job. And I got into multi-level marketing. You know, I was looking for stuff, so I answered ads in the paper. I got into MLM, that's network marketing. I was involved with a company called New Skin, and I was going to hit it big with network marketing. And I remember watching a video in my two-bedroom apartment in Nashville, and there was a guy on the video. His name was Mark Yarnell, and he was a distributor for New Skin International. and they were exploding at the time, and you saw the beach behind him. You saw him talking about what a great business it was. You saw the sailboats going right by him. And when I was watching that, it was freezing in Nashville. It was winter. And I said, man, I want to go there. And he was in San Diego, California. And I had met a buddy from college who wanted to move out to California as well. And so we hit the road, and we drove across country and came out here to San Diego. And so, you know, I was involved with multi-level, you know, some other things. I hustled in high school. I would do direct sales, selling greeting cards. When I was a kid, I had a lawn mowing business where, you know, I'd knock on doors and cut yards and rake leaves and clean gutters and pick weeds. I painted address numbers on curbs. I installed door viewers. Direct selling stuff. That's why I was really into selling. I wanted to learn how to sell. And when you know how to sell something and you've got the confidence to go up and knock on a door and sell a product or a service and do something to install a door viewer in a door. That's a little peephole. Takes you 5 minutes and you can make yourself $20. You know, that sure beats working for a living. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Do you still operate any conventional businesses, or are you purely on the internet now?
I do, actually. It's kind of ironic. I did, just for fun, I started back my tie-dye manufacturing business. It was something that I really enjoyed doing back then. I didn't know anything about marketing or branding, you know, so I have a whole new way of looking at the business. And, you know, it's not like I'm going all out on it, but I have a brand of tie-dye t-shirts called Cali Tie-Dye, C-A-L-I, which represents that California dream. What brought me out to California and millions of other people who follow their dream to come to California to make it on their own. So, you know, I've got a website if anyone wants to see those shirts called CaliTieDye.com, CaliTieDye.com. And actually, I did another conventional business that I operated starting about 9 years ago was I was in the pen manufacturing business where I manufactured a line of pens. For instance, invisible ink pen, which looks like a regular felt tip marker, and it's got a special ink in there that is clear, and you can mark on your valuables. And if the valuable, let's say you mark your cell phone with your driver's license number or your laptop, and then under a UV light, you can see the mark. So it helps police return stolen property faster, and it's a way to ID your valuables in case they're ever stolen. So I manufactured different pens that did different things. One was a pen that removed red eye from photographs before digital photography, and a counterfeit money detector pen that detects counterfeit currency, a vanishing ink pen that you could make a mark on a piece of paper and it would vanish. And so I've made all these things right out of my home.
That's very good for writing checks.
That's right. So what was great about that business is the margins. And anyone interested in doing interviews, one fantastic thing about doing interviews and creating information products is margins. Because after you develop your product and you sell it, it's all profit. You're selling ones and zeros, digital stuff, unless you're printing it up or putting it on a CD. And that is the beautiful thing about doing interviews and creating information products from interviews. Well, these pens were almost as good, not quite. It was good because I had an exclusive process for making these things without any equipment. And a pen would cost me about 17 cents to manufacture, and I could wholesale them at $1.50. So almost 10 times my costs, which are huge margins. And still today, I have accounts that I've had since 1996. I still manufacture the pens. I just got an order from an account from almost, I think, 13 years ago. I don't actively promote and market the business, but I have companies who still order from me, and I pack the pens up and ship them out.
Okay, excellent. Now, with regard to audio marketing, have you ever tried promoting any music?
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. That was a good question. No, I haven't, but it was something that is interesting to me, and I even sought out and did an interview on this subject. I don't know if you've seen it, and I'll direct you to it, but I did interview a producer. Did you see that one?
I haven't yet. There's so much stuff on your site.
I know. Okay, well, you may be interested in this one, but I am interested in that because, you know, marketing music, it's interesting to know, you know, how to successfully market a song or an album because anything I learned with that can help me market my audio interviews. One's a song, but one's an interview, but we're still marketing audio content. So I did want to learn something, and I've interviewed a producer and a manager from the music industry out of Atlanta, Georgia, and I'll forward that to you. There's another website which anyone listening or you may want to check out that has to do with a lot of marketing of music. It's called TuneCore.com, TuneCore.com. But certainly, a lot of the ways that music is marketed, I am kind of parallel marketing my audio interviews. I use iTunes in the podcast, so I have about 200 of my interviews up on iTunes as a podcast, and it takes some effort getting them all up there, and they have categories. So anyone searching for podcasts under certain topics like marketing and advertising or money making, they will certainly find me there. And then you can certainly use YouTube. There's so many ways to market music and so many ways to market audio interviews, but nothing specifically on music other than those two.
Right. I think you've answered pretty much of my question, which I was going to say just with that introduction. It just struck me, because I've been a musician all my life, the market has changed so much now, and it's so difficult. Well, you can't go the conventional route anymore, trying to get a record deal with a big record company. It just doesn't work that way, because the market's absolutely flooded with CD copying and file sharing, and it's just impossible to sell an album. So I was going to ask you to think outside the box, to give us some fresh ideas to promote music. Unless you're in an established band with a following and plenty of gigs, then you happen to start at ground zero.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I did make some notes. You know, I can remember an interview with MC Hammer. You know, MC Hammer, when he first got going, he had his first album. I don't know which one it was, but you know how he sold his records? He had them printed up, and he sold them out of his trunk. And I think he sold 10,000 records right out of his trunk, and he kept all the margins. So there's direct sales, just like I was talking about, you know, knocking on doors. That's possible. You don't see many musicians trying to sell their stuff with direct sales, but it could be an interesting way to market music if you've got a good product, if you've got something that's really good.
Yeah. I wonder if there's a way of doing it which is not quite so hands-on. The reason why I say this is because I've got involved with a bunch of musicians, and we have created a fantastic album. It is really so good. Everyone who plays it doesn't stop playing it. It's the best recording I've ever done, and I'm in my 50s.
Is it rock and roll?
It's hip-hop, strangely enough. I was never into rap before, and then suddenly I find myself involved in hip-hop scene.
Do you have it online?
It's online, yes.
Send me the link. I'll check it out.
Yeah, okay. For anyone listening, the website is buriedhead.com. BURIEDHEAD.com.
What does buried head mean?
It's really just drawing attention to people who are hiding from the realities of life, I suppose.
Oh, buried head. Got it, got it. Like your head's buried in the sand.
That's exactly.
Okay, I didn't get that. Okay, got it. I did make some notes. I mean, you know, you got direct marketing. You know, I guess the way you see it mostly done is, you know, you got to do gigs. They say you got to get out there. You got to be playing. You got to do shows. And you let people know about your music, or they want to see you live. I wrote down, you want a USP. You know, you say everyone who listens to it wants to hear it again. What makes you different? How are you different from every other hip-hop band? And whatever those reasons are, you need to telegraph that. So when you talk about your band and you say buried head, you know, you should have that reason why, what's resonating with the listeners, you know? So it almost telegraphs what separates you from every other hip-hop group out there. You know, you think of a gimmick like Devo. When Devo came out, I would always think about were those red hats that they wore. Also, another great way, and this is probably one of the most powerful ways, you probably know this, to kind of increase your credibility, is you get a larger, well-known band to endorse you, have you open up for one of their shows, and then your band is elevated to the status of that larger band that maybe worked for many more years to getting to where they were. You could do free concerts to get people to know about you, and then do some intense merchandising, whether you're selling t-shirts or CDs or albums, or give the free concert, just like I have all the free recordings, but sell them some stuff while they're there. It could be giving free concerts and control all the food vending, you know, or tickets into the show. And then you want to brand your band. You know, you want some good branding so it's easy to remember. Buried head, you know, gives me a picture of a head buried in the sand. I don't know, you know, the name of your band's really important as well, or the name of your album. Is that the name of the band or the album?
No, it's the name of the band. The first album's got a different name.
Did you watch the Super Bowl last night?
I didn't. I'm not so much into that sort of thing.
Did you see The Who? Are you into The Who?
The Who? Were they playing
there? Yeah, they were the halftime show.
Oh, were they? I know we're going off subject slightly here. I used to actually be a photographer's assistant for a very famous photographer called Ross Halfin. And back in the 80s, we used to go around and we took photos of The Who and Kiss and so many of the big rock bands. And he he's still going strong. He's really well known. But we went to the Who. I actually walked out of their concert because I didn't like it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but we went around John Entwistle's house, who didn't live very far from where I used to live in the UK, and we took photos of him there. But he's no longer with us. Bit of history for you there.
And then you have a very powerful medium is YouTube. I don't know if you ever saw, it was all over the news, all over the social media. It was about a guy who wrote a song about his luggage being lost on one of the airlines. Maybe it was like Southwest or one of the big airlines. And so he wrote a song about how his luggage was lost and just how poorly Southwestern treated him and his luggage. And he wrote a song about it. And, you know, people resonated with it because he tied his music into a current event where people were very frustrated with the airlines at that time, and we're always frustrated with the airlines. And the thing got millions and millions of hits, and then the mainstream media picked it up. And, you know, you can do an angle like that. Your band can tie in to a current event and do a song about it. Like, you know, let's say you could do a song about Obama or something, just as an example. You know Adam Sandler, the Hanukkah song? Do you know that song, the Hanukkah song?
Okay.
He did a song and tied it into a Jewish holiday and made it kind of cool, you know? So you could tie into a holiday or a current event. You could do press releases to get that out. So that's a good angle, taking your music and tying it into a current event to get media to pick it up and get your name out there.
Right, yeah. In a sense, it's just making yourself stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, it's marketing.
Yeah, that leads nicely into your own business, and strikes me that most internet businesses approach marketing in the same way when I look on the internet. So how is your method of marketing different from the crowd?
Most other internet businesses say, give me your money and I'll give you my product. I say, here's some great, valuable, free stuff first, and if you like it, I got some more stuff I'll sell you. So I prove my value first, and then I'll get paid later.
Right. Yeah, that's happened with me, because I got onto your site, and I've listened to a load of the free stuff, and there's so much more I still have to listen to, and yet I still got my card out, and I've actually bought some.
You bought some stuff.
Yes.
You know, I always believe if I build it, they will come. You know, build something really magnificent and big and good quality, and the people will come. Kind of like that movie Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. In whatever you're doing, have a mission and purpose. So if you hear in the beginning of my interviews, you hear me say, my goal is to build the world's largest free downloadable interview site of MP3 interviews on marketing and business. I state it on the beginning of every interview. So anyone listening to my stuff understands why I'm doing it, kind of who I am. My kid was sick, and now my mission is to work from home and build the world's largest downloadable audio interview website. So you know what I'm about, you know, in about 1 minute. You know, it's just a natural law. What you sow, you will reap. There's a famous guy named Jim Rohn, who was like one of the top dogs in the motivational industry, and he would talk about planting seeds, you know. You know, a lot of these other marketers, they look at the seed and they say, give me some fruit! Grow! Give me some fruit! But it doesn't work like that. Nature says you got to take care of the soil, you got to dig a hole, you got to put the seed in there, and you got to nurture it, and you got to water it, and then if you do that right, you'll have all the fruit you need. It'll feed you for a long time.
Yeah, I think that's very, very good advice.
You got to understand that person on the other side of their computer screen, it's a real person, you know? And it's real easy to forget that sometimes, especially if you're busy.
Well, yeah, I see that's your website. Just looking in one keyword in the search engine in Google, I put in internet marketing interviews, and you're number one out of 34 million. Now, is that through just your sheer hard work and persistence and love of your job, or do you spend a lot of time working on search engine optimization?
I don't spend a lot of time doing the SEO stuff. I mean, I have in the past. I've bought Gray Hat software and Black Hat stuff and tried to beat the system. I used to do paid AdWords. That was years ago, and it just caused me all kinds of problems. I just said stop with that stuff. My site is becoming more and more optimized. When I build my pages, I have educated myself a little bit to optimize it, to understand what a title tag is and a description and how to optimize the page. I have a basic understanding of that. And I have invested in getting my interviews up on YouTube, linking back to my site. And and having testimonials on Amazon.com that link back to my site. And I have some private people who have some great rankings who link to multiple pages on my site. So there is some strategy in SEO. It is very important, but I don't spend a ton of my time on it. Now, I do have a blog that seems to be doing really well that I purchase a certain theme, which is supposedly SEO-friendly. And I've been lucky because I've been around for a while. I've been going for around 8-9 years, so my hard-to-find seminar site has been online for a long time, and that helps you out a lot. But mainly, now my focus is just, I've got some good rankings, the site's clean, there's nothing funky about it, no black hat stuff, and I'm just now building content. So I've been fortunate. At one time, I'd had no listings because I'd done some funky stuff. I don't know exactly what it was, but I was not even listed in Google for a couple years. And when I lost that listing in Google, that's when I went on to YouTube. I had to come up with new ways to be found other than the search engine. But my main focus isn't SEO. I am back on Google now. I've got good rankings, which is fortunate, but you could lose those rankings anytime. I hope that answers it.
Yeah, I don't think you will lose your rankings because you've got so much content on there now. So.
Yeah, I hope not.
So how many websites do you have? I mean, is it just mainly the seminars?
90% of my action is from hardtofindseminars.com. I do have some other sites. I've got another site called hardtofindads.com, which was a site that features hard-to-find editorial-style advertisements from the 30s and the 40s and the 50s and 60s, and a lot of copywriters are into that. And I have some other sites. The main thing is really hardtofindseminars.com. That's 90% of everything.
Are there any types of marketing that you're yet to try?
Yeah, there's tons of stuff I haven't tried. And it just takes time and effort and willing to risk a little bit of money. But, you know, I've got something that seems to be working. But every marketer should be trying new things. Even me, I should be doing more stuff. But I'm like anyone, you fall back into what's comfortable and you get into habits. But I'd like to play around with some radio advertising. I'd like to test and make direct mail profitable on a small scale. There's so much to do. I would recommend anyone should always be trying different things.
I mean, there's so many niche markets, you can't shake a stick at the number. I was just wondering of the more popular niche markets such as weight loss or dating. I just wonder how you would go about beating the competition in a very competitive field such as these.
Well, I think, first of all, competition is good in a way because what it says is it's a humongous market. Like the weight loss market and the dating market is 10,000 times bigger than my market, motivational interviews on business. It's huge. So there's a lot of room out there. But how do you beat the competition? You know, you've got to separate yourself. You've got to draw a line in the sand and say, here's how we're different. And that comes down to your USP, your unique selling proposition. You know, we sell a whole consulting course called the HMA Marketing System, and it teaches people how to become marketing consultants. And you sell project work to small businesses, whether they're online or offline. And the very first step that you sell a client is to develop their USP, their unique selling proposition. And there's four steps in doing that. So if you're going to go into the dating market, what you first want to do is you want to look at all your competition. Look at all the big players out there and what they're doing. Then you want to interview people who are customers of the dating market and find out what their likes are, what their dislikes are. And you're just looking for an angle. You do your research. You're trying to find, you know, where some of the frustration is, where people are unhappy. And then when you position yourself, you want to differentiate yourself from everyone else. And that differentiation could be, you know, you're the only dating site that, you know, you can pick a very small segment, a demographic in that, you know, it could be a dating site for just people from Scotland. The world's largest dating site for Scottish single men and women. That's a differentiation, right?
Right.
You said, I am the dating site for Scottish singles, men and women. Everyone else is specifically for everyone else. So you could differentiate yourself geographically through male or female, and you got to do your research. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And then once you have your differentiation, then you can start creating your advertising. See, most people are always selling on price. You know, our dating site is less money than the other person's because that's all they got. Because they don't know why they're different because they haven't taken the time to talk to their customers or to learn. There's a great show that just came on. for anyone listening. The first time it aired was right after the Super Bowl last night, and it was called Undercover CEO. And what they did is they had the CEOs from humongous corporations. The corporation they had was Waste Management, which is a private garbage company, from recycling plants to garbage truck pickup to landfills, humongous company. And the CEO went undercover and worked in different plants, from recycling to the pickup to the sorting facilities, worked on the front lines, you know, the worst of the worst jobs. And the stuff he learned working in the trenches, talking to the employees, you know who knows most about the companies? It's those frontline employees. They're on the front line. So a business has to get on their front line and find out what's going on the streets. And then once you know that and you have your CEO, then you have the right message that you can put in your advertising. Then you've got something to say rather than just copping out and saying, well, our price is lower, because it's easier to compete on price. But if you have some real reasons why you're different and you can differentiate yourself, you don't have to be the lowest price guy. You could be the most expensive, but have a reason to back up and say why you're the most expensive and still get the order.
Right. Well, moving on, you mentioned that time is your most precious commodity. Is it easy to outsource your work? And can you give us some advice on how to find reliable people?
It's very easy to outsource, especially today. And I'll give you two websites. Now, first of all, my whole business is all outsourced, except for I do have one assistant who works with me in my office. She's here right now on the other computer listening in. But the way anyone can find any expertise or any kind of labor or any kind of assistant is they can use Elance, which is ELANCE.com, and then Craigslist. You've heard of Craigslist?
Yes.
Okay, so Craigslist, you can go on and place an ad under the gig section, and there's all kinds of categories from labor to, you know, assistance to entertainment to web graphics, whatever. You just place a description. I'm looking for someone to help me with my website, who's good at, you know, Microsoft Front Page, who can type, you know, 60 words a minute, who can edit audio interviews, who can do whatever. You write your description of what you want. You post the ad. In 15 minutes, you're going to have people applying for your position. And you can have someone working within an hour, within the next day, anytime you want them. The hardest thing I think I would tell your listeners for them to understand is time is your most valuable commodity. And it's either time or money. Either you're going to do it all yourself or you're going to pay someone to help you. And if you're doing it all yourself, it's just going to take you a lot longer to get to where you want to go. But I think that everyone also knows their strengths and their weaknesses. So if there's stuff you hate doing or you have a hard time doing or you're not good at doing, get an expert. You can never spend too much money on someone who is an expert in their field, whether it's designing a website or writing web copy or doing editing, especially if it's something you don't like to do. You need to make a list of all the stuff you hate doing. And if you have the money, if you can do it, get some help, because it'll make your life so much easier, so much less stress, and it'll just make things a lot easier for you.
Okay, I shall go on the Craigslist straight away.
There you go. And you can get some reasonable rates. You don't have to pay $20 an hour. There's a lot of people who are looking for some extra cash money, and you can pay them by PayPal. You want to bring them in as independent contractors. You don't want to have them as employees. That's too much.
Right. I've been down that road before.
Yeah.
And that drains the bank account.
Right. For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
I was quite interested to read a publication by Mike Filsaime, actually, and he was going on about lawsuits, and he says that it's not a question of will it happen, but rather when will it happen. So I was wondering if you have ever been in the firing line of any lawsuit.
I've never been in the firing line of any lawsuits. Now, I was one of the firers. I did have a lawsuit against someone who I'd done a joint venture deal with, and, you know, we had an agreement that he was going to pay me a certain amount of money, and I learned that he wasn't paying me all the money, and I went after him for my money. And then he countersued, but it never went to court, and no one won anything, you know. It basically got dismissed out of the courts. But other than that, I've never had a problem.
Have you done anything to protect yourself just in case?
Yeah, I have. I'm a corporate corporation. My operations under my business are all under my corporation, JS&M Sales and Marketing Incorporated, and that provides me some protection. If the company's ever sued, my personal assets are protected.
Right. Oh, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. But to avoid that, any listeners, you know, it is something to always worry about, but if you're good to people and you're not screwing anyone over, most likely you're not going to have a problem. If you say you're going to give someone money back after you sell a product, you know, within a certain time, give the money back. Don't screw around. Just do what you're going to say and treat people right. Golden rule. And you should never have to look over your shoulder. You should never have to go to court. And, you know, if someone comes after you with, like, some frivolous thing, like they're trying to blackmail you, something like that, I would never settle. I would fight something like that if someone's trying to scam you. And, you know, with some good research, you can learn how to fight someone like that. So never, ever settle if someone's trying to blackmail you or do that, because you'll get a reputation. You need to fight to the end and, you know, really fight back and make it cost a lot of money. In the one lawsuit, when I came after a guy, I didn't think I was going to get my money back, but I had the satisfaction. I made him pay because I know he probably spent in the tens of thousands of dollars, and my attorney was costing me about 10 cents on the dollar, where I'm sure he was paying full price. So I had some satisfaction in knowing that. Make him pay.
So anyway, moving on to something a bit more positive, who are your heroes and who inspires you?
Okay, who are my heroes? Who inspires me? People like you are my heroes, you know? You're getting off your butt and you're doing something. My customers who come back to me and have a success. My consultants who say, Mike, I took the training and I went out and, you know, I called on 5 people and I got my first client. Those are my heroes. People who do something with this information and don't just listen to it, those are my heroes. People who actually listen to this stuff, too. I mean, I think that is doing something. That's all a start. But actually getting out there and really putting the stuff you're learning to use, that inspires me, because I know it has the potential to change lives, and it will change lives. And if I know that I was the start of that, that's what I really like. All the other mentors that I've learned from, like Brian Tracy and Zig Ziglar and Jay Abraham and Gary Halbert, you know, these are my mentors as well. You know, all the years I studied the motivational tapes and all the people that I've interviewed, I learned from all of them.
Do you have a spiritual background? Because these mentors, lots of them seem to be that way inclined.
I'm not really a religious guy. I'm Jewish, but I'm not, like, Orthodox or anything.
I didn't mean religious, really.
But spiritual, yeah. I'm spiritual, you know. I believe in God, and I believe in the golden rule and karma. I definitely believe in that. I believe in treating people right. You know, if you don't, it's going to come back to you. I do absolutely believe that. What you sow is what you reap, and that's what I'm basing this whole website on there. Give and you'll receive. You just have to believe, you know? The biggest spiritual thing is just have that belief, have that faith that you're going to do it eventually.
So something on a personal level here which I battle with is, obviously I'm not American. I think Americans are a lot more generous than people who come from the United Kingdom. But my parents went through the Second World War and they had rationing and everything like that. So always scrimping and saving. I had that sort of drummed into me when I was a kid. And so trying to fight against that mentality where you're trying to actually save everything and not spend too much, I think that's my big challenge, really, just to be generous with my money.
I think that's a good trait. I mean, I don't like to waste money. I absolutely don't like to waste. And, you know, everything I do online, in a nutshell, I mean, it is all about saving. I'm trying to get the most with the little. By having the internet deliver my content for free and to host it for free, and by doing the audio interviews, is the quickest and cheapest way. Imagine if I did video production compared to audio. I mean, how expensive that would be. I'm trying to do it the cheapest way, but I'm trying to do a really good quality product. So I don't think what you've grown up is a bad thing. And as far as giving money away and being frivolous with it, I'm not like that at all. But when you have intellectual property, like products and stuff, a lot of these products I've developed probably 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, and they're done, and they're just digital products, and they're just sitting at a web page. And so it's like, to give that out, that has something of some real value. If it's something I'm selling for $100 and I give that to someone, that person really saved $100 and they're really appreciative. So that can go a long way. But what did it cost me to send an email? Nothing. And so when you develop your information product, it is a form of currency that you can use to get things. I've used a lot of my expertise to barter, to trade for web hosting. I mean, for years and years, I had my websites all hosted, and I would trade for my services for developing information product for my web hosting guy. So when you create your own products, understand that you can sell them for money, but also you can barter them for different services that you would ordinarily pay money for. And I've got a whole course on that barter and trade stuff. I don't know if you saw that.
I've noticed it, but I haven't actually delved into it yet. That will be quite fascinating.
But the frugalness that you grew up with, I've heard that from Scottish. As a matter of fact, one of the greatest all-time copywriters was a guy named Claude Hopkins. And Claude Hopkins was the father of modern advertising. I've got a whole product on him. And in his book, My Life in Advertising, his mother was Scottish too. And he talks about the exact same thing, how as he grew up, it was drilled into him to be very thrifty. You may want to read his book, My Life in Advertising, because this was the man for modern-day advertising.
Right. I think there's a saying which goes something like, a Scotsman and his money are not easily parted. So anyway, if you were to give one piece of advice to our listeners, what would that be? Well, the most important piece of marketing advice?
Most important piece of marketing advice I can give to your listeners, I'd say believe in yourself. Commit to something and don't ever quit. And just don't look back. Just decide what it is you want. Believe that you can get it and obtain it. And do the work, meaning commit to it, and don't quit. And don't look back. And you'll have it as long as you stay consistently on track towards that.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. So anyway, self-discipline is a necessary skill for achieving success as an entrepreneur. Did that come naturally to you, or did you have to work at it? And can you also give us some advice to help us from constantly searching for the internet holy grail and getting nowhere?
You know, there is no secret, okay? I mean, the secret is there is no secret. It's hard work. There's no free lunch. You got to get to work. There's no magic. You just have to commit. I mean, my site that you see, I've put years and years of effort into it and invested tens of thousands of dollars into it, from assistance to editing, to the production work, to the descriptions, to the transcripts, to marketing, and many late nights and many early mornings. It's almost like a prerequisite that it's taken me this long, I guess, to get to where I am, and I think there's a reason for that, because, you know, you learn a lot on the way. But I would say anyone looking for quick money, I don't want to say it's not out there, because there are shortcuts, and especially with joint ventures. You know, if you don't have a product and you don't have money, if you have skilled expertise in marketing, you can go out and make a lot of money without a product and without money. And it's by tapping into other people's marketing assets. But even that will take some effort, and that is a shortcut to getting what you want, by leveraging other people's hard work. But as far as a holy grail, it's just commit to something, do something you like, you know, have a specific goal, have a plan of action, and work that plan consistently. And don't give up and don't look back. I know it's kind of trite, you hear that all the time, but that would be the advice I would give.
Right. And what motivates you?
I thought about this question. I would say immortality. People, when they want to build something, I like to build things, okay? And I've got a picture of this, not a hieroglyphic, I forgot what you call this thing. You know, in ancient Egypt, they found all the engravings, like on the pyramids or stuff. I have that above my desk, and I look at that, and it reminds me to build something that's going to outlast me.
The Eye of Horus, is it called, from Tutankhamun?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that one. It's like a pyramid, and, you know, those ancient Egyptian women in there. Yeah, it just reminds me of something old. Build something that's going to be around after you're dead. And I think a lot of people are driven by that. They don't think about it, but it's immortality. When I'm gone, my interviews will outlast me. When Michael Jackson died, you know, he physically died, but his music is out there, his legacy is out there, and I think that kind of motivates me to do that, to build something really great that will outlast me.
I think just giving to people and giving people the enthusiasm, and people remembering you as somebody that really inspired them and helped you along the way will actually be such a great legacy to leave. And I think you've done a wonderful job of starting that up.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, that makes it all worthwhile, definitely. When I get a testimonial and I get an email that says, thank you, thank you, thank you, I can't believe I found this site, this is unbelievable, you know, that makes it all worthwhile. It's like my pleasure. You know, I had an email like that this morning, and I said, thank you very much for your kind words. I go, what a great way to start the day out, because it was one of the first emails I read. That keeps me going, and that is very satisfying.
I sort of see you as the interview guru of the internet, having seen the wonderful stuff you have on your site. I was wondering which of your interviews were the most memorable, and for what reasons, and have you formed lasting friendships with any of your interviewees?
Boy, there's so many great interviews. I can't list all of them if I tried to memorize them, but if I saw and kind of was reminded what the interviews are, I could remember something from all of them. But one of my favorite interviews was with a guy named Jim Kemp, and he is an expert on negotiation. His positioning, his differentiation was totally different with everyone else. All the other top negotiators were win-win negotiating, and he positioned himself as win-win doesn't work. And he's written a couple books. One's called Start With No. And that interview was so good and so helpful for me, understanding the sales process and just getting inside his head. He had a lot of wonderful mentors. What's great about doing these interviews, you know, I don't want to say I'm buddies with Jim Kemp, but if I needed help, I could pick up the phone and call him. After the interview, I've had 3 or 4 phone calls with him. We may do something down the road. You know, the interview has helped promote his negotiating service. Another interview, which was awesome, was with Glenn W. Turner. And Glenn W. Turner was the founder of a very well-known but old multi-level marketing company called Costcott. And he had such a great story. He was born with a hair lip to an unwed mother. He was very poor, and it was just a rags-to-riches story. And he was probably one of the most incredible, I guess, salesmen that you've ever heard. I have an interview with him just to hear the passion come through his voice. This guy made millions and millions and millions of dollars motivating and inspiring people. I've had exchanges with him by email. And then Art Hamill, which is my business buying expert. I was just on the phone with him on Friday. We did another 2.5-hour interview. I've been interviewing him for almost 5 years. I must have 25 hours of interviews with Art Hamill. And I'd consider him a friend and a mentor. I could pick up the phone and call anytime. Melvin Powers, who was one of the greatest mail order men around. He's in his 80s now, and he has sold tens of millions of books in the publishing business many years ago, and I have conversations with him. So yeah, these interviews, once you do an interview with them and you spend a couple hours on the phone with these real influential people and very nice people, nice experts, you have a license to keep in touch with them. It all depends how much effort you want to put into that. But certainly, as you do interviews, you and I, we spend some time on the phone, and it's not going to be a big deal for you to call me up, you know, in a month or so if you need something, and, you know, we've started a relationship.
Yeah.
So you'll find that. So having that connection to some of your experts and being able, the interview gives you a license to contact them again. You know, you've done something together. I've been promoting them, which is, remember what we said from the very beginning. They want that promotion. You know, they want the word out about what they do and their expertise. So it works both ways.
Right. I should have really asked that question last to end on a high. But my last question to you is, I like to think that most successful people become successful because they are intrinsically nice people, though I may be a little naive here. But can you tell us if any you have interviewed have not conformed to this rule?
I couldn't really tell you, because the reality is your listeners may listen to this interview for the first time, and I may sound like a really nice guy, but you really never know somebody, you know? You don't know. And so when you're interviewing someone, or when I'm interviewing someone, and they know that that interview is going to be distributed to the public, they're going to be on their best behavior. You're not going to really know that person. But, you know, if that's a concern of yours, you can always do research on the internet. You can pretty much bet if they screwed over a bunch of people, you type in their name and you're going to find someone talking about them if they've been bad.
We all make mistakes in life and then we all move on. So that's part of the process.
I'm not there to interview them if they're a nice person or a bad person. I want them for a reason. Yeah. I want their interview. I want to milk them for their expertise. They may be a horrible person, but they may be a hell of a businessman and may be able to share some valuable information on what they know about business. Just because they're not a nice person doesn't mean they're not an expert at something. I want that expertise for selfish reasons, just like they want to be interviewed for selfish reasons, because if they've got something to promote and sell, they want it out there. It's free advertising for them.
Well, it's win-win for everyone. It's a winning situation for you, It's a winning situation for the person being interviewed, and it's a winning situation for the listener. I think one has to always make sure that one is happy first so that one can give out, and I think that's all part of the process.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I hope that maybe you'll come back and interview me sometime when I have achieved something notable on the internet.
You got it. It's a deal. I'll do that.
It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you, Michael.
No problem. Hey, it was my pleasure. I hope some of the stuff I've shared helps out any of your listeners. And if anyone needs anything or has any more questions, they can certainly go to my website at hardtofindseminars.com. They can email me. I'll help them out any way I can. If I can't answer something for one of your listeners, I'll direct them to one of my experts who hopefully can.
Okay, that's absolutely fantastic.
I hope you've enjoyed this interview with Norman, and if you have any questions whatsoever, please call me at 858-274-7851. If you want to learn more about how to make money doing audio interviews, go to hardtofindseminars.com/AMS.htm. That's hardtofindseminars.com/AMS.htm. For more interviews like this, go to hardtofindseminars.com.